Hey bosses, before we get started, this week I would like to thank you guys for supporting the show, leaving all these amazing reviews on iTunes, and for all of our new Patreon supporters. Go to investlikeaboss.com, click on support the show on the top right under Patreon, and check out all the benefits. Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny, and welcome to episode 146 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am in Arugagaman Bay in Sri Lanka. Sam is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Johnny, nothing makes me happier than starting my morning talking to you with a glass of hot green tea and starting my day by learning something new in the investing world.
Yeah, I'm excited for today's episode. It hits the three things that everybody wants. Everybody in our community is looking for. It's non-correlated to the stock market. It's open to non-accredited investors. And it's open to international investors. And normally, you know, the biggest gripe that people in our Boss Lounge have is like, I'm so excited, but I'm not American. Or I'm so excited, but I'm not an accredited investor. Or I'm so excited, but, you know, this is correlated to real estate and stocks again. So this topic really hits home with those kind of what do you want to call it? The three kind of unicorns.
three pillars of iLab investing. And I think the concept is awesome. Obviously, crowdfunding as a concept is something that we're familiar with. The genesis behind it is something that we're now privy to through a lot of different episodes. But I feel like with art, this is an exceptional use case because unlike real estate, like if you want to invest in real estate, most people can go do it, right? You can go out and find a residential house. You can put 10, 20% down. You can finance the rest if you have good credit. But with art, yeah, you can go buy the cheesy stuff on a cruise boat like a lot of us have. But if you want to get a Rembrandt, you have zero chance, right? I mean, most people don't have $10 million in cash to go out and buy a Picasso. And before crowdfunding, you know, no one in the mainstream really had the ability to pull this off. And I think that the really interesting part now is just with all the money printing that's going on in the world, it's not just the USA, it's everywhere, man. The reality is that all assets and prices of everything are going higher in the future. And all types of collectibles investments from the S&P 500 to collectibles like art and collectible cars, everything's going higher in prices. So I think this is a really interesting time to be thinking about an uncorrelated asset class like art that we've never actually looked into now 150 episodes into this podcast.
Yeah. And if you guys have listened to the previous few episodes, you'll know that Masterworks is a sponsor of iLab, but it wasn't until we kind of dug into it more and we saw that we can get the founder, the CEO, Scott Lin, on the episode and how interesting this topic would be that we were like, you know what, actually this would be a really good episode. And I think you guys are really going to like this. I think it's, you know, one of those things where, you know, you're probably not going to go, and I probably wouldn't recommend going 100% into into investing in art, you know, but for for diversification, you know, really just have a percentage of your portfolio be non-stock market, non-real estate correlated, this is something to look into. And it's open for everyone, which is like, it's crazy. And if you guys, you know, listen to this podcast, know of any other investments that we haven't covered yet that hit those three pillars of the mystical unicorn, you know, open to non-accredited investors, open to international investors, and non-correlated to stock and real estate market, let us know in the Boss Lounge. We would love to hear it.
I do think we have to do collectible cars after this episode, Johnny.
Ooh. Is that going to be a good one, right? To go out and get yourself a classic Ferrari?
Something tells me one of us are going to jump on that.
Yeah. Something tells me it's going to be Sam, guys, not Johnny.
Yeah. So listeners, we'll keep the personal update slide on this because next episode coming up, we have maybe not next one, but the one after, we have quarterly updates coming up. And we got lots to share there. But on this episode, we're going to have on Scott Lynn, the CEO of Masterworks. We're going to talk about art as an investment class and compare it to some of the favorite investments of boss listeners like the S&P 500. And afterwards, we're going to do what we did on the last episode. We're going to have Derek on for some quick highlights and stats about art as an investment category. And then we'll have our standard exit commentary. So hope you guys enjoy this episode. I think you'll enjoy learning about art as an asset class. I know I did, looking into it in preparation for this episode. And I'm glad we're touching on some new subjects, Johnny.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. So without further ado, here's Sam Marks with Scott Lynn.
And we're back. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's going to be a great episode, a new asset class that we haven't covered yet. And I guess just digging into it, Scott, I've got to hear a little bit about your background. And before we get into Masterworks, just I'm very intrigued about art as an asset class. It's something I know very little about.
Yeah. So, Sam, I've been, I guess the way to think about how I got into art is I've been starting technology companies for the past 15 or 20 years. I've been also collecting art probably about the same amount of time. I think I bought my first painting when I was 18 or 19 years old. I've become very familiar with the asset class. And I think the thing to me that's so interesting about it is you have this very large asset class. It's roughly $1.7 trillion in value. You compare that to gold, which is $5 trillion. Private equity is $3.5 trillion. But historically, there really hasn't been a way to invest in it. So the only way to allocate, quote unquote, to art has been to buy a multi-million dollar painting, which obviously for most people just isn't possible. So the idea of Masterworks really came about from that. How do we take this asset class, which historically, at least in great part, has outperformed most other asset classes, including the S&P, and make it accessible to the average person?
Yeah, I think of this as sort of almost, when I think of art and collectibles as a whole, I almost think of it as like a good old boys club or something that you only have access to if you're part of the country club locally. And it's really intriguing of how you guys have kind of taken that and brought it to the masses through the crowd. And just a little bit, not to dive into Masterworks specifically yet, but how did that all tie into Masterworks at the beginning? How old is Masterworks?
The company now is right around 2.5 years old. So we spent the first year and a half really figuring out how to securitize a painting, for lack of a better description. So it took us a year and a half to get our first investment product through the SEC, get it qualified, and start selling shares to investors. Today we're doing one offering of a $1 to $10 million painting roughly every 2 weeks. So it's definitely picked up a lot of momentum.
Are you passionate about art as just a collector, or did you always primarily look at it first as an investment?
You know, everyone always asks me, how did I get into art? And the truthful answer is, my mom was an amateur artist. I grew up with art books. So that was the reason that I found it interesting in the beginning. But, build an important personal collection outside of Masterworks for 10 or 20 years by artists like Pollock, Rothko, Klein, de Kooning, an important, well-recognized collection, and have also appreciated just the investment potential, the investment characteristics of art. So, I do love art. I mean, I'm on the board of many nonprofits in the art community, but I think at least in Masterworks, we take a very financial approach or investment lens to everything that we're doing.
And you take a look at and or track art as a category compared to other collectibles, say as antique cars or coins or anything like that?
Yeah. So, I guess the thing when I think about art compared to other collectibles that's important to me as a collector or an investor is just how much data is there on the asset class for me to get comfortable with two things. What are the returns for the asset class? And then what is the correlation to other asset classes? And art uniquely has been around for hundreds of years, right? It's one of the oldest asset classes there are. Many people don't realize this, but Sotheby's, one of the leading auction houses up until recently, just went private, is 275 years old. So this is an asset class that's been traded for centuries at public auction, which creates a really large data set to analyze the asset class on how it's performed over time? And then also as importantly, how does it correlate to other asset classes? So when the stock market goes up, does the art market necessarily follow the same trend? And does art as an asset act as a good diversifier for a portfolio? And we were one of the first companies, or our research team was one of the first to publish a research study on correlation with Citigroup at the end of 2019. And we effectively concluded that the correlation between art and other asset classes is around 0.1 or 0.2, meaning it's effectively uncorrelated, but still provides really good returns. So we're just one of many now that believes that this is an asset class that should be part of any investor's portfolio.
I think Ray Dalio said the holy grail of investing is 15 uncorrelated bets or 15 uncorrelated investments. So there's one of them right there. What are you guys seeing in a time like this where everyone, although the market has pulled back a little bit or came back a little bit, what are you guys seeing in art investments right now? Do you see a flood of money going into art and away from markets or anything, any other type of activity?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting time. So one of the things that we think drives the lack of correlation in art compared to other asset classes is that it's a global market. So, you know, someone that buys a $10 million painting in the US may sell it to someone in Europe at a later date. So because of that global nature, we think there's been a lack of correlation. I think this is one of the first crises where we've seen it really impact the world overall sort of at the same time. Our purchasing team outside of our research team tracks 600 or 700 different artworks at any point in time to try to understand what are people willing to sell different paintings for, and then we bring the best opportunities to the platform. And the one thing that we have noticed is we really haven't seen a change in price. So we haven't seen collectors willing to really drop price on works yet. You know, it certainly could happen. I think when we go back in the past and we look at different financial crises and how did the art market perform, in the 2000 crisis, the dot-com bubble bursting, the art market increased in value. In 2008, 2009, it had the highest correlation ever. It actually decreased about 50% of what the S&P decreased. So there was correlation there, but it still wasn't as much as most other asset classes. And then interestingly, in 2016, the art market declined when the S&P went up. And our best guess at that is because of capital controls in China or Brexit. But in general, historically, it's been an uncorrelated asset class. I think it will be interesting to see what happens this time.
And what did you say, Scott, the annualized returns have been, or annualized growth in the art market?
Yes. So if you think about the art market last year, I mentioned earlier, there's roughly $1.7 trillion in asset value. Last year, approximately $68 billion in art sold. Out of that $68 billion, if you look at just the top 100 artists, these are household name artists like Picasso, Basquiat, Warhol, et cetera. Those top 100 artists constitute 62% of the art market. Wow. And those top 100, or what we define as the blue chip segment, outperformed the S&P by roughly 180% from 2000 through 2020. So it's a really interesting asset class in terms of total overall returns. And that's, you know, when people ask, you know, what segment of the art market should I invest in, we tend to guide people to the blue chip segment just because it's much more predictable and overall as a very large segment, it's provided really interesting returns.
It sounds a lot better for the cocktail party as well, just going out and being like, yeah, I just bought a Picasso. Somebody you haven't heard of.
People definitely like that.
You mentioned the top 100. How easy is it for a new artist that's alive to crack that top 100?
There's two ways to answer the question. One is it's better than ever. So we're seeing more living artists enter that top 100 list than ever before. But it's still a very small number. I mean, I think it's, you know, 10 or 15 people now in the top 100 list that are living. So unfortunately, the career of an artist is super tough. You know, there's right. millions of people that try, and there's very few that make it big in their lifetime.
You could say the same about podcasting, Scott.
There's always hope, Sam.
All right. I'm very curious, historically, we go back, I guess it's been up until just recently, that if you wanted to get into art, you're basically buying it yourself. There really wasn't the fractional ownership, or at least not on a large scale. When people would buy these cheap blue chip pieces, where did they typically hold them? Would they put them on show at their house, or almost all these held in some type of special vault somewhere?
You know, there's lots of articles and sort of controversy around art being held and storage facilities, which it is. But most large collectors that I know display their work. So, it's one of the reasons that collectors purchase it. So I think most well-known, important art is either displayed in institutions or in collectors' homes.
Got it. And you mentioned blue chip a couple times, and also looking through Masterworks, you see that term used a lot. Is blue chip really just kind of the creme kind of top 5%, top 2% of art out there?
I mean, it depends how you define top percentage, right? So it's the top, we define it as the top 100 artists in terms of sales volume. But those top 100 artists are 62% of that $68 billion market.
Okay. And so that would be any piece that would, that one of those top 100 artists have produced?
Any painting. So if you think about Monet's market, for example, last year, I think Monet sold somewhere around $400 million, which is really interesting. And you think of it in the context of, a small cap or a mid cap company. You know, if he's turning over $400 million a year in art, and maybe that represents 3%, 4%, or 5% of the total Monet's out there, you know, his market cap is a several billion dollar market cap as an individual artist. So many of these artists have their own unique markets that are not dissimilar to companies or other industries.
Scott, I remember growing up and watching my parents buy some cheap artwork on a cruise boat or whatever. And there was always this little chat about how, well, if you hold it until the artist dies, then it might be worth something. Do you see a direct correlation in that, or is it sometimes the case or always the case?
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, don't buy art on cruise boats.
Well, even as a 6-year-old, I could have told him that. But
so that's not a recommendation. But yeah, you do see a correlation between an artist passing away and prices going up. But it's not because the artist passes away. It's because the artist is no longer producing work. One of the things that's unique about art is that you have a declining supply over time. So when an artist is living, they're obviously painting. But when they die, those paintings go to collectors, and collectors then often donate paintings to museums or institutions at a later date. So the available work to purchase is continually shrinking, which does drive up prices. And the example that I like to use, which is an artist that a lot of your listeners probably know about, is Jackson Pollock. Pollock, during his lifetime, painted these drip paintings that a lot of people are familiar with. And I think today there's only, 21, 22, 23 drip paintings left in private collections. And most of those paintings, with the exception of a handful, are frankly B or C paintings. They're not great paintings, but they're still selling for $20 or $30 million just because there's nothing else available. So if you want to own a Jackson Pollock and put it on your wall, that's what's left.
Got it. You mentioned a little bit about the risks. Don't buy paintings on cruise boats, especially Royal Caribbean. Carnival, probably not also recommended. But what are some of the other things that you see or hear that are common mistakes in buying art? Maybe, first-time investors. What can really go wrong there?
Yeah, I wrote a blog post on this once on the Masterworks website, but I think first-time collectors, myself included, tend to focus on the artist himself rather than the example. So as an example, Picasso created, and I'll get this number wrong, but I think around 60,000 objects during his lifetime. Everything from, really A-plus paintings down to ceramics or napkin drawings. And obviously, all of those 60,000 objects that Picasso created are not equal. So a lot of times, beginning collectors will gravitate to anything by that well-known name. But those objects appreciate or don't appreciate very differently than an A-plus Picasso painting.
Got it. I'll hear a little bit about your team, Scott, and how the whole buying or procurement process happens. Is there one person on your team that's just dedicated to sourcing pieces to put on Masterworks?
Well, before we even decide, I guess, on what object to purchase, we go through a process and we actually expose a lot of this data to investors on the Masterworks platform, mm-hmm. where we try to understand which artists in the art market are accelerating most quickly from using public auction house data. So when we started the business, we had a team of 25 interns that went out and collected auction catalogs from the 1950s through today, which I guess is the past 70 years. And they recorded every single time that they found a painting and what it was purchased for, and then later what that collector subsequently sold it for, all publicly available data. And we've published how much collectors have made or lost on those individual paintings on our website. So now I think we have over 80,000 paintings and what individual collectors have made in terms of profit or loss on each of those mm-hmm. transactions. And we use that data in aggregate to inform which artist markets are accelerating the fastest, which are declining, and so on. So our research team essentially has identified 30 or 40 artists that we're focused on this year and next year based on that data. And then once we decide on the individual artist market that we like, our purchasing team goes out and tries to find the right examples at the right price from that particular artist.
That seems like a really good use of interns. And yeah, that's really smart. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we think so. I'm not sure if they would agree with that.
Oh my gosh, it's a perfect use. So it's really focused on the artist versus, I mean, that's a strategy, right? You identify the artist and then you go out and find the best pieces with it for that artist.
Yeah, that's correct.
I love it. Now, once the piece has been identified, you guys guarantee the money to acquire that piece, or does it go directly to the crowd first?
No, we always use balance sheet capital to go out, purchase the painting with our own money, and then we effectively sell it off. And, you know, for better or for worse, that is one of the dynamics of the art market. In order to find really good deals and present good opportunities to our investors, we have to be able to move fast. Mm-hmm. And that really just requires that we use our own capital to do that.
Got it. So, and then how does the model work for you guys in terms of your fee structure that is visible to the people that are purchasing the paintings from you? Is it just resell, or is it a structure that's built on top?
Yeah, we make money based on management fees that are not dissimilar to a hedge fund. So we charge a 1.5% management fee every year, and then we earn 20% of the profit when a painting sells.
Mm-hmm. And then you guys buy the paintings and you must hold it somewhere after you acquire it, right?
We do. It really depends on the painting. So we have a gallery in Soho that sometimes we put the paintings in. You know, today we're selling a lot of works that are $1 million or less in a matter of hours. So we're not necessarily displaying those works. So sometimes those will sit in storage in the interim. But we're really focused from an art community perspective on working with artists' estates, artists themselves, foundations, to place those works in certain institutions that make sense for the artist and make sense for the painting, so that people can go and see them over time. It's also great marketing for us. Mm-hmm. So long term, while we do continue to we will continue to run the gallery in Soho, we really want a lot of the paintings to be in institutions.
What's the average price of a piece of, or a painting that you guys have on Masterworks?
You know, averages are tough, but the range is between $1 and $10 million is generally what we're focused on. It's hard to buy a blue chip painting for less than $1 million. And then we sort of today, at least with our investor base, cap out around 10 million.
Okay. And how many investors would typically be on one piece of painting? Again, averages are tough, but.
It's in the thousands for these you know, several million dollar paintings. It really depends on the work. I mean, our investors range anywhere from $1,000 into a painting to $200,000 into a painting, and everywhere in between. So it's really difficult to predict, and honestly, it changes from painting to painting as well. I mean, we see new people come in all the time, and it's a little bit hard to predict.
Scott, do you have your eyes on any dream paintings out there that you've always hoped to acquire, either personally or through Masterworks?
You know, that's a hard question. I mean, it's so rare for these blue chip paintings to come to market. I think in terms of, you know, really excellent examples, we tend to think of these $100 million plus paintings. Last year, I believe there were 6 $100 million plus paintings that sold. This year is hard to tell with coronavirus and other things going on. But you know, I do think that in our lifetime, in the next 10 years or so, we'll see a $1 billion painting, which is hard to fathom.
Which painting would that be? Is there only a couple that could kind of get up there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. You know, the most recent example obviously is the Da Vinci painting, which most people probably heard about, that sold for $450 million a few years ago, and that was a painting that I think the art world thought would sell for somewhere around $100 million or $200 million, and just because it was Da Vinci and it is so rare, it wound up selling $450 million.
Wow, it's incredible. I guess there's not that many, you know, interesting things out there to collect for the super, super wealthy. And that's certainly one of them. What about the liquidity, Scott, of getting into some of these deals? Is there a second market, or what's the typical length of time that your money's in one of these paintings?
That's the most common question that we get from investors. And there's two ways to think about liquidity with us. One is we now have a trading platform where investors are trading shares between each other after they invest in the initial offering. So all of the shares in all of our paintings at IPO are priced at $20. And then there's a trading platform where investors can get liquidity after that, if they want to. And then secondly, obviously, is over time we expect to sell the paintings. So we tend to tell people to think of a 3 to 7 year hold in the art market, because it is an asset class where you can't really buy a $10 million painting today and then sell it 1 month later for $12 million. It's pretty rare. So it does there is a hold period that's required to really generate returns.
Now, on the second market, would the shares be just priced at whatever the community decides it are, or is there any type of structure to how those can be priced?
Yeah, we have to stay, from a regulatory perspective, we have to stay entirely outside of that. So investors really just set their own ask price, and buyers kind of, you know, decide whether or not they want to accept that or negotiate with that investor. So it really is negotiated between the two people.
Got it. When the pieces are finally sold and investors are paid back, is the sale usually to a private individual, or are they sold to another collection of groups?
Meaning when the painting is sold, it would almost always be to another individual.
Okay. So it goes basically from the crowd to one individual.
Correct.
Oh, very interesting. All right. So we have a list of a few questions that we asked when we found out you guys were coming on the show. We put it out to our Patreon group and also some of our forum groups. Wanted to see if we could get into maybe, we got 4-5 good questions here. Are you up for that?
Sure.
All right. I know the listeners will love it. So Michael Peters says, when I looked into Masterworks, it seemed like each piece of artwork is owned by a separate LLC, meaning a separate K-1 for each at tax time. Do you plan on any sort of fund or basket of all the artwork they own for people that want exposure to the asset class but aren't interested in picking individual paintings?
Right now, we don't have a fund that we offer to investors. And I think part of that is because we do believe that it's important, particularly since it's a new asset class for most people, for an investor to be able to see the particular object that they're investing in, look at the historical returns, look at our risk rating, and make a case-by-case decision with every painting. That does require a more hands-on approach, but at least today, that's what we think is the right investment product. We might revisit that down the road.
All right. Joseph also asks, I feel like art is very speculative. What would you say to someone who is skeptical on the true value of art?
You know, This is always a hard question to answer. I mean, the only thing that I would say is I would just, you know, look at the data, right? It's an asset class that's been around for centuries. It's been publicly traded at auction for centuries. It has one of the largest data sets there is on performance and returns outside of real estate. You know, we've now done a correlation study with Citigroup. I think it's a strategic asset class because it does outperform inflation. It isn't correlated. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily describe it as speculative. Now, I definitely think that it's speculative if you're walking down the street in your neighborhood and you walk into a gallery and you buy something off the wall, that's you know, unlikely to produce returns. But the segments that we're focused in have been relatively predictable for decades.
I love it. Well, Ross also asked, and I think we covered this one before, Scott, but it doesn't hurt to revisit it. What typically has higher returns, living or dead artists? I would assume those that have passed away since they can't create work anymore. I know we already covered it, but might be worth just touching on it once more.
Yeah, higher returns is a difficult question. But I mean, obviously, there's living artists who have sold paintings for $50,000, and you know, today they're selling them for $5 million several years later. So that would obviously be a great return. I think we see a lot more volatility in returns with living artists, and we see more predictability or lower volatility with artists that have passed away for the reasons we previously talked about.
Next question is very interesting, actually, to me, and I never thought about this when thinking about this upcoming episode. But Daniel asks, I would like to hear your thoughts on digital artwork, and particularly that is that secured by the blockchain. And I know we just had all this crazy stuff going on with cryptocurrency that we've touched on a lot of times in different episodes. But digital artwork was one that was really starting to sort of blossom. That I was, you know, I forget the name of some of them, but some of these digital art pieces coming out of Japan seem to have a lot of momentum. Have you guys given that any thought, Scott, over at Masterworks?
We haven't. I mean, I do think the digital art is really interesting when integrated with different platforms, for example, video games, right? The ability for a well-known artist to sell, you know, digital art or objects in video games or on other platforms, I think is an interesting concept. I don't know how I think about individual collectors, quote unquote, collecting digital art. It does feel a little strange to me. Like in some ways, I think part of experiencing art is the physical object. But that might just be because I've been in the art market for so long.
What, I think there was Crypto Kitties or something that were just going crazy for a while, but
yeah, Crypto Kitties would prove that comment wrong, right?
Elias says, I have an account already with Masterworks and I would love to invest. They got the minimums down to 1,000 from 5,000. Is there any chance they could lower it to 500 for iLab listeners?
Yeah, you know, we don't really take an approach with I guess just blanket minimums. We try to work with investors on a case by case basis to understand their portfolio, how much they're interested in allocating to art, and what minimum makes sense for them. So certainly, if that's the minimum that makes sense for that investor, you know, they could certainly call our membership team and have that conversation. But for a lot of our investors, frankly, investing $500 just doesn't produce the returns that make sense or have a meaningful impact on their portfolio. So, you know, again, I think diversification in this asset class matters. And then I think overall allocation to you know, your overall portfolio matters. So it's kind of a case-by-case conversation we like to have with people.
Got it. Well, Scott, it's been fun. I really enjoyed learning about art as an investment class and what you guys have built at Masterworks. I've already submitted my application to participate. I'm looking forward to having my onboarding call coming up probably next couple of days. But before we break, is there anything else you want to leave listeners with? We'll, of course, share everything in the show notes and have some exit commentary coming up. But I wanted to see if there's anything else you wanted to leave everyone with before we break.
No, I think we thoroughly covered it. I really enjoyed being on, and thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for coming on the show, Scott.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey bosses, it's Derek. I just want to take a little bit to do a recap on this call and give you a little bit more information about Masterworks and kind of the art market as a whole before we kick it back to Sam and Johnny in the outro. Now, I'm no expert in fine art and I never would claim to be, but it seems a lot of you are because there's about $1.7 trillion in art out there right now held by high net worth individuals. Now, we heard Scott tell us that the blue chip artists, which they claim are the top 100 selling artists, outperform the S&P 500 by more than 180%. Now, I checked out the Masterwork site. There's some really great information. Even if you don't sign up, you should definitely go through the site. They have a pretty good access to a lot of things that you don't need to log in for. Now, I found a report from Citibank that was on there. They also have some third-party reports. And that great return isn't always the case for the art market as a whole. Now, that Citi report said that from 1985 to 2018, the art market, that's the whole market, averaged a 5.1% annual return. Now, in that same exact time period, the S&P 500 did 12%. So, you know, definitely not as high, but we are looking for those non-correlated assets at all time to make a you know, a more diversified portfolio. So I think this is definitely something to check out. Another thing that I found interesting was Scott was calling, you know, these blue chip artists as, think of them as like a multi-billion dollar corporation. And I think that's really interesting because these artists do big numbers. Now, they do put access to a few artists. I found two that most of you have probably heard about. I'll go through kind of a quick summary of what they did last year. Jean-Michel Basquiat sold $129 million in paintings in 2019, and they give three examples from last year. First up, there's one that was bought for $352,000. It was held for 23 years, and then later sold for $12.24 million. That's a 35x return. Next one, $43,000 it was bought for, held for 24 years, and then sold for $4.03 million. Even better return at 94 times. The last one, a little shorter time period to give you some comparison, that was bought for about $4.1 million and then sold for $4.9 million. That was a 19% gain, still not too bad. On the opposite end of the spectrum, an artist that I'm sure most of you have definitely heard of, Andy Warhol, did $228 million in sales in 2019. And three examples they gave from last year. One was held for less than a year, so it was a short-term investment. Bought it for $410,000, sold for $310,000. Now, wait, that's going the other way. That took a 25% loss. The next one was bought for $179,000, held for 4 years, and sold for $130,000. That's a 27% loss. And you might be sensing a trend here. It keeps going. This other example is bought for $480,000, held for 11 years, sold for $301,000. It's a 37% loss over that time period. So not all these are going to be home runs, but it's, you know, it's just like individual stocks, you know? It's all about timing, who's hot, who's not, you know, what's the hottest company, who's the hottest artist. It's very similar, and it's all about timing. One nice little perk, you actually get access to the gallery where a lot of this art is held if you sign up for Masterworks. That's in the Soho neighborhood of New York. So you can actually see and touch, well, maybe not touch, but you can at least see the artwork that you're investing in. And all shares are $20, no matter the painting, whether it's a $20 million painting or a $1 million painting, each share is going to be $20. And the number of shares will be determined on how much they spent on the painting. As mentioned in the interview, Masterworks takes a 1.5% annual management fee, and they'll also take 20% of the profit from a painting when it sells. Now, of course, if there's no profit, they're not going to take that fee. They do plan to hold paintings for about 3 to 7 years, as Scott had mentioned, but they do also guarantee that the painting will be sold before the 10th anniversary of the initial offering, so they'll never hold it for longer than 10 years. And if you want to get out of your holdings early, they have a really cool secondary market that you can preview even without logging in on their website. This is a market where you can put your shares up for sales. If you bought them at 20, maybe you've had it for 2 years and you want to get out at 24 or whatever you want to do, and someone can counter back at 23. So, you know, if you're strapped for cash and you really need to get out of a holding, it's pretty simple to do as far as I can tell. All things said and done, I think this is a really interesting offering. I'm going to sign up and see how it goes. Hopefully I'll be able to share some of the results in the Boss Lounge or on Patreon with you guys. That's it for me right now. Let's kick it back to Johnny and Sam for their final thoughts in the outro.
Derek, you are the man. Thank you so much for those insights. And big thanks to Scott for sharing kind of the insights behind the art industry. I had no idea, Sam. I knew nothing about art before this episode.
Me either. I learned a lot about this. All I knew about art before was just the stuff that my parents bought on a cruise boat, Royal Caribbean.
I'm so curious. Whatever happened to that piece of art? Is it just hanging in your living room somewhere?
Yeah, no, it's marked. It's in my inheritance. You know, we're hoping at some point that it becomes worth money, and then my sister and I will fight over it. No, it's, you know, that stuff looks, it kind of looks good for decoration, but the reality is, it's almost like cryptocurrencies, right? What we've seen happen in cryptocurrency. You have basically one cryptocurrency that has any type of real, seemingly has held some type of real value. And all the other stuff is sort of garbage to most people. I know there's some value there, but with art, it's kind of the same. And that's why I think Masterworks really focuses on the blue chip stuff. There's a proven history. There's established value there that's been multi-generational. Whereas most of the stuff that you're ever going to pick up on cruise boats or buy at the local art gallery, it might be nice for decoration, but the reality is the resale value on that stuff is next to, you know, toilet paper.
Well, it's kind of like a...
Sorry for all the hustling artists out there, but it's got to be the truth, right?
Yeah, well, I think of it. I mean, it was a good analogy about the cryptocurrencies or the tokens where, you know, there's literally thousands of them out there, and there's only going to be... You know, and not even the top 100, it's maybe the top 10, maybe the top 1, maybe top 3 mm-hmm. that people ever want to buy, you know, trade or sell. And everything else is just a gamble. You know, people might see potential in it, thinking like, yeah, one day people are going to want to buy this piece of art or this, you know, this iLab token, whatever it is. But, you know, until then, it's just hanging there, just hanging out there. You're not really using it. There's not really any... You know, any use for it. And if other people don't decide suddenly it's worth paying more for, there's no reason for the price to go up. So I am curious, though, how much was that piece of art that your parents bought on the cruise ship?
I think most of those go kind of in the $500 to $1,000 range, maybe.
So this is what you're kind of banking on for your retirement, Sam?
There, you got some good salespeople on those Royal Caribbean boats. I'll tell you what. Got to be careful. Watch out for them.
Oh, my God.
The cool thing with art is, if you think about it, I don't know which way the world's heading right now. Obviously, it seems like there's a larger and larger separation of wealth. But when it comes to the Picassos and Rembrandts of the world, it doesn't really matter how the overall economy is doing. If the rich are getting richer and you have this 1% of rich, there's always going to be demand for these blue chip paintings, right? Like, people are always going to want Picassos and Rembrandts. I would love to have one in my house if I had an extra 20 million laying around that was disposable. I think it would be really, really cool. And you always have that. Same with collectible cars and things like this. You don't have to have an incredibly rolling economy globally for these things to go up in value. You just need to have a super wealthy 1%, and there's going to always be value in this art.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, and I do compare it to, I guess even with like really classic cars, they're not making any more 69 Mustangs, and even though there are some cars that become trendy that aren't that old, like kind of the new generation. So, for example, you know, like a 97 Toyota Supra, like a super clean, you know, BMW M3 or something from, you know, 1994. These might end up selling for a lot of money on, you know, bring a trailer or these auction sites, but it's really the old classic ones that will continue to go up in value. Everything else with the new kind of the new era of cars or the new era of artists, whether it's, you know, like I'm assuming Warhol's not that old. You know, he's not a Rembrandt. He's not, you know, hundreds or thousands of years old. And again, I know nothing about art, but it's like when every single person has heard of the classics, you know, Rembrandt, Picasso, and those aren't—they're not being, you know, it's literally a finite resource that, if anything, gets less and less, you know, for everything that, you know, you guys had mentioned, including, you know, private investors buying it and just locking it up and never selling it again, never displaying it, and it is a bit sad for the community people who want to see it, but I can see why that goes up. I can also see why newer artists could hit it big, but it also could be a fad where it that can kind of come and go.
Yeah. I wonder if you could buy one of these paintings and allow it to be on display at a museum and then just sell it whenever you want to. So it does kind of benefit the community, but it is a good store of value and seems to be a great investment long-term as well.
Yeah. And I think, I'm assuming, you know, when they display it, they could have a little plaque saying this is provided by, Sam Marks,
at Johnny FD.
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram.
If you enjoyed looking at this Van Gogh, follow me on Instagram.
You know what? As silly as that sounds, I bet you in the next couple of years, some Instagram influencer is going to, rich kid of Instagram is going to do that.
I was telling my dad about Masterworks and the idea. He's like, you know, it'd be a great idea. He's like, if they should send every one of the investors in a piece of art a canvas screen print. You probably get those done for whatever, $5 or something, and them one so that you could put it up in your house and you can be like, yeah, I'm an owner of this. It's a replica, obviously, guys, but I'm an owner of this painting. I own, 2% of this Picasso, and you could put it up on a display in your house. I think that would be actually pretty cool.
I think that would be amazing. I think that's a great idea. I think it's definitely going to cost them more than $5 to print, but even if it costs them, $50 or something, that could actually be a good kind of tiered upsell for them because, let's say the minimum investment is $1,000 right now. Let's say you invest, let's say $5,000 or whatever it makes sense financially for them. You hit that tier, you get a certain size print of it. If you hit the next tier, you get a full size, print of it. And then if you hit kind of the third tier, if you invest $10,000 or more or something, you get the full size print in a frame with a little plaque or something that says, your name, partial owner of this painting, original is displayed at blah, 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 or something like that. I think that would definitely attract a lot of people to invest.
I like that idea, actually. I think I might actually just do this myself. I might just go in on one of the paintings and then just print my own canvas and put it up in Chiang Mai. A Van Gogh.
Oh my God! Yeah, I can see that. So have you thought about if you would invest or not?
You know what? I went through the onboarding process. I just haven't done my call because I've been on the go the last week. But I'm gonna do it. I'm just not gonna do it right now because I'm already in the process of trying to consolidate my investment portfolio a little bit, and I have something for our quarterly updates coming up, Johnny. But I won't spoil it right now, but basically I'm overwhelmed right now with tasks and to-dos and filings and all this stuff. So I definitely want to do this. I'm a huge believer in uncorrelated assets, uncorrelated bets. I feel that I greatly benefited from this in this downturn, in the COVID downturn. I didn't feel the pressure and the stress that I have before when the Dow Jones was heading to 18,000. I wasn't really bothered, and it's just because I have so many uncorrelated assets, and I think this is another great one, and it's also something that is cocktail hour conversation that's pretty interesting. And I whether we want to say it is or isn't, I think there's definitely some value to that, to understanding the asset class and a little bit of history about art. So yeah, it's something I definitely look forward to doing in the future. I'll probably put it off until towards the end of summer when I clear a few things up.
Yeah, I can definitely 100% see that cocktail hour bragging rights, or just to even be able to participate in the conversation with, people much wealthier than you in a different circle. Yeah. It's great for networking.
Yeah.
And you can say you're a partial, shareholder, partial owner of this, Monet or this Van Gogh. You don't have to say you have $1,000 invested in it. Maybe you have much more, but even at that baseline, you technically are a partial owner. And if you go Sam's route and you get a print, you can even show this off, and when people come over, you have something to talk about. So I do think with just that, it makes it already a valuable part of your life, kind of the external benefits of investing, kind of like with your brewery, just being able to talk about it, go there and feel like a partial owner because you are. that has a lot of kind of extra value on top of what it can make you. And that on top of it being a non-correlated asset, as well as something that's really open to everyone, makes this something that I think a lot of people are going to look into. So if you guys end up investing, let us know in the Boss Lounge and discuss and tell us what you bought, because I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, Johnny, when we go to Jeff Bezos' holiday party at his new LA mansion that we got invited to this January, it'd be really great to be able to talk about our Picassos and Van Goghs.
and you're gonna...
Oh, you didn't get the invite? Oh,
no, you can forward that to me though. I love it. So if you guys haven't joined our Boss Lounge, it's our private Facebook group just for Invest Like a Boss listeners. To sign up, all you have to do is go to investlikeaboss.com, click on bonus or click on Facebook group, and you'll have instructions on how to sign up. And if you want to support the show, if you want to get this podcast into more people's ears, if you want to help basically pay Derek's salary so we can continue having him on to do all the research as well as book these amazing guests, you can support us on our Patreon. Just go to investlikeaboss.com, click on Patreon. You can sign up there. And as a big thank you, every single week, I'm going to be reading one Patreon's message on why they signed up and kind of a little bit about them. This week, I want to thank Nicholas Rosen. He has an IT company in Texas for the last 20 years now, sitcloud.com. And he says he's doing very well in life, but with all the added knowledge from both Johnny and Sam's podcast, my life is becoming richer and I look forward to a whole new chapter in my life. Thank you both from the bottom of my heart. I don't even think you realize how you're changing people's lives. Thank you, Nicholas. Thank all of you Patreons and thank all of you subscribers and listeners.
Yeah, great episode. Thank you, Scott, for coming on the show and Derek for helping set it all up. And I like this. I like the format of these episodes with Derek coming on with the quick stats afterwards. So we'll try to keep him on the hook for a little bit of commentary himself. Maybe even get him into some interviews. I don't know. He's showing some signs of talent, I got to say. But it was a fun episode and fun times, to say the least.
Yeah, definitely. I was excited for this and I'm excited to catch up. I'm excited for the next quarterly update. I think there's going to be a lot of changes and a lot of big announcements there. So all of you guys, stay subscribed and we'll see you in the next episode.
Chawabunga.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.